Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
Some families seem destined to live between worlds. Theirs was one of them. From the day the youngest child was born, the air around the family seemed to hum with invisible energy. They were spiritual people, not churchgoers, but believers in unseen forces, in intuition, in signs. Many claimed to be psychic. Most had stories they couldn't quite explain. And for as long as anyone could remember, the family had never lived anywhere for long. Houses blurred one into another, new paint, new walls, same strange company. They stayed within the same city, but every move seemed to follow a rhythm only the spirits understood. The hauntings didn't belong to the houses, they belonged to them. It began when the youngest was six, a quiet, nervous child with an imagination that even then felt like an open door. The family was living in an old two-story home, a big, drafty thing with high ceilings and a creaking staircase. The children shared a bedroom on the upper floor, and every corner of that room seemed to hold shadows a little too deep to trust. The older brother had a Halloween mask, one of those distorted plastic faces molded into a permanent scream, the kind of mask that seems to stare even when hung on a wall. The little one hated it, wouldn't go near it, told everyone it felt alive. No one listened. That night, while trying to fall asleep, a strange pull made the child roll over. A whisper of instinct, an invisible nudge toward the walk-in closet. The closet door was open, a slice of darkness against the faint yellow light from the hall, and in that doorway stood a figure, tall, black, shapeless. Its edges wavered like heat on asphalt. And on its face, that same mask, the grotesque Halloween face that had terrified the child for months, now floated in the dark, worn by something far too tall to be human. Its body was cloaked, draped in what looked like the ragged robes of a grim reaper. And it didn't stand so much as hover. It made no sound, it only watched. The child couldn't scream, couldn't move. The moment stretched until it felt endless. Then, with the desperate courage of the very young, the child rolled over, buried their face in the pillow, and squeezed their eyes shut. Minutes passed, or maybe hours. When they finally dared to look again, the doorway was empty. But the terror didn't fade. It rose instead, a wave that broke in sobs. The child leapt from the bed, ran down the hall, and burst into their mother's room. There was comfort, yes, but not belief. The adults dismissed it as a nightmare. The child knew better. They had looked too long. The image was carved into memory, too real, too still, too watchful to be born of dreams. Over time, the family grew used to small disturbances, whispers that seemed to echo through the halls, toys that moved when no one touched them, doors that opened in empty rooms. But nothing ever quite matched that night. In 2007, they left the house behind. But the spirits didn't stay there. The third house was supposed to be a fresh start, modern, bright, only a block away from the old one. The mother had chosen it for its proximity to the protected forest next door. A quiet stretch of green, she said, made her feel at peace. It didn't last. The very first day they stepped inside, something in the air felt charged, unsettled. A vibration too subtle to name, but impossible to ignore. The youngest, now 10, had begun to study the paranormal, not from fear, but fascination. While the adults unpacked, they explored with a friend, playing tag through the empty rooms. But the laughter stopped when the banging began. Footsteps overhead, doors slamming shut upstairs, a scraping, dragging sound like furniture being moved, except every room was empty. The friend froze. "Who's up there?" No answer. When they told the mother, she smiled it away. "New houses creak," she said. "You're just hearing the place settle." But the house wasn't new and the sounds weren't settling. They were stirring. Within weeks, the activity intensified. Lights flicked on and off at random. Water taps turned themselves on in the middle of the night, the hiss of running water echoing through the hall. Toys rearranged themselves when no one was home. The shadows came next, fast-moving streaks glimpsed out of the corner of an eye. always gone when you turned your head. The family learned to live around the hauntings, to expect them. But then came the bubble. One afternoon, while folding laundry in the youngest bedroom, the mother looked up to see a large, shimmering sphere drift down from the ceiling. A bubble, perfectly round. Except there had been no soap, no water, no one blowing bubbles anywhere near the room. It had simply appeared. The mother called for her son to fetch a camera, but by the time he returned, the bubble had vanished. No pop, no trace. She described it later as clear like glass, but alive with light. It felt more present than anything she'd ever seen. The family tried to laugh it off, but the laughter didn't stick, because not long after that, their luck began to die. Business failed, money disappeared, the car broke down, fights grew frequent and vicious. By the end of that year, the family had gone bankrupt. Depression and hopelessness hung over the house like smoke. There were suicide attempts, shouting matches that bled into silence, and it felt as if something was feeding. The youngest began to believe the haunting wasn't random at all, that the darkness in the house had attached itself to the cracks in their lives, widening them just enough to let itself in. When the bank finally took the house, it almost felt like an exorcism. But the relief was short-lived, because the spirits went with them. The new house was old, wooden, creaking with history. Built sometime around 1910, it sat crooked on its foundation, with floors that leaned slightly toward the center, and windows that never quite shut all the way. From the outside, it looked like the kind of place you'd expect to see in an old photograph. The kind of house that remembered things. By the time the family moved in, they were running on fumes just financially, emotionally, spiritually. They told themselves it was just a roof over their heads, a temporary refuge until they could rebuild their lives. But deep down, they all felt the same quiet dread, the sense that they hadn't left their ghosts behind. The youngest was 12 now, bright-eyed and too old to be dismissed as imaginative. They'd read enough about hauntings to recognize the signs, and within days of settling in, the signs were there. Footsteps in empty rooms, whispered voices that stopped mid-sentence when you entered, lights that flicked on and off as if to announce you weren't alone. And always, that feeling of being watched. It didn't take long before the family accepted what they had quietly suspected for years. The spirits had followed them. The mother was the first to name them. She had always been sensitive, what she called tuned in. She could feel energy the way other people felt temperature. One morning, as she made coffee, she stopped mid-stir and said aloud, "They're here again." The youngest asked, "Who?" "The same ones," she replied. "They came with us." Over the weeks that followed, they began to identify personalities within the activity, distinct patterns, behaviors, quirks. One presence liked to play tricks, hiding objects that were needed most urgently, only for them to reappear hours later in impossible places. A wallet inside the freezer, keys under a pile of laundry, a hairbrush sitting on top of the refrigerator. Another spirit seemed to prefer children's laughter, flickering lights, and tapping on doors whenever the youngest was in a good mood. It felt playful, almost impish. A child ghost, perhaps. Then there was the darker one, a shadow figure that appeared most often near the back hallway, tall and featureless, the outline of a man made entirely of black. He never spoke, never moved quickly. He simply stood, like a sentry at the threshold between worlds. The family came to call him the old man. The youngest saw him more than anyone else. Once in the hallway mirror, once standing beside the wardrobe, another time reflected faintly in the glass of the front door, a silhouette so dark it seemed to pull light into itself. The air around him would grow heavy, dense, but not always threatening. Sometimes his presence felt almost protective, as if he were keeping watch over the house. Other times it was harder to tell. Then came the animals. It started with the sound of nails clicking against the wooden floorboards late at night, too heavy to be mice, too rhythmic to be random. One evening, the youngest saw a blur of motion in the corner of their eye, a large black shape rushing past down the hall. They turned, heart pounding, but it was gone. Only the faintest ripple of air remained, as if something had just brushed by. A dog. That's what it felt like. The weight, the speed, the sound. And yet there was no dog. The family hadn't owned one in years. A few nights later, the mother called out from the kitchen, laughing nervously. "I just saw a cat," she said. "A black one. It brushed against my leg." But when she looked down, there was nothing there. The family began to suspect these weren't ordinary apparitions. Shadow animals, maybe. The spectral remnants of old pets or echoes of something older still. Unlike the human spirits, these creatures didn't bring fear. They carried warmth. Their presence felt soft, familiar. Sometimes when the nights were long and the house creaked like a ship in a storm, that faint brush of invisible fur was a comfort. It made them feel less alone. Still, the activity centered mostly around the youngest, lights flickering in their room, music turning itself on and off, shadows gliding along the wall, a whisper that came from nowhere and everywhere at once. Sometimes it was gentle, a murmur too faint to make out, a rustling sound near the bed. Other times it grew insistent, heavy breathing by their ear, a voice that tried to form words but dissolved into static, and at night always the pressure. It would start near the foot of the bed, the feeling of weight pressing down on the blanket. Small at first, like a cat curling up near their legs, then heavier, as if something were climbing closer. Sometimes there was warmth, even the faint sound of purring. Other nights, the air went cold instead, and the pressure felt wrong. Not an animal, but something mimicking one. The mother felt it too, in her room the same sensation. The weight, the purring, the kneading. Only hers was stronger, clearer. She would describe it as if a ghost cat were trying to get comfortable at her feet. It wasn't frightening exactly. It was simply strange. The family had grown used to the paranormal, and over time they learned to read the tone of the house. These presences didn't feel malevolent. If anything, they seemed helpful, nudging the family toward forgotten tasks, flicking off lights, stirring intuition. Sometimes the youngest would sense the urge to check something. A candle left burning, a door left unlocked, only to discover it was true. As though the unseen were trying to keep them safe. They came to think of the house as shared space, a coexistence between the living and the dead. Still, there were moments that reminded them how fragile that balance could be. One night, the youngest woke to find the entire room filled with whispering. Not words, but layers of breath. Dozens of voices overlapping like the murmur of a distant crowd. The sound rose and fell, rhythmic, almost hypnotic. It was both terrifying and strangely beautiful. Then, just as suddenly, silence. Another time, the radio flicked on by itself in the middle of the night, an old love song playing softly in the dark. The volume rose slowly until it filled the room, and then just as deliberately, it faded again, the power light blinking off. The next morning, no one admitted to turning it on. For the family, the paranormal had become ordinary. It threaded through their days like background noise. The flicker of a bulb, the creak of a floorboard, the sudden scent of something floral in an empty room, all of it felt less like intrusion and more like communication. The youngest had come to view the activity as part of their identity, almost a heritage. They were, after all, a psychic family, people who straddled both worlds without belonging fully to either. And yet sometimes, late at night, when the house breathed and shifted, a part of them wondered what it meant to be so open to the unseen. If you could sense the dead, what stopped the dead from sensing you? In time, the family learned to live with their ghosts the way one learns to live with the weather. Unpredictable, ever-present, sometimes inconvenient, but never fully hostile. It became part of their rhythm. The clink of a light switch flipping by unseen hands, the murmur of footsteps above an empty floor, all of it folded neatly into their definition of home. They no longer flinched when things moved, a photograph tilting on its own. The faint click of the stove being turned off before smoke could rise. The cold brush of air that slipped past when no door was open. If anything, they grew grateful. The presences in the house didn't feel like invaders anymore. They felt like quiet guardians, protective, watchful, curious. But the youngest, who had always been the center of the activity, couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to it than simple haunting, that what followed them from house to house was not just echoes of the dead, but something older, something tied to them directly. By 14, the child had become an observer of both worlds, half in, half out. They studied. Read everything they could find about spirits, hauntings, and psychic energy. Learned about poltergeists, shadow entities, residual hauntings, animal spirits, and spirit guides. The more they read, the more one truth began to crystallize. Every haunting is also a conversation. And what haunted them seemed to want to talk. It began subtly. A whisper here, a sudden image there. Sometimes a name would drift into their mind with no reason. Thomas, Mary, little boy. None of them meant anything at first, until one night, while doing homework at their desk, the youngest felt a familiar shift in the air. The room grew colder, not a draft, but an almost deliberate chill, as if something were leaning close. The sound of quiet breathing filled the silence. Then a voice, soft as wind, "Help me." The pencil slipped from their hand. The words weren't heard so much as felt, vibrating in the chest, low and mournful. When they looked up, the air seemed to bend slightly, as though something unseen had weight. Then came a faint knock, once, twice, from inside the wall. They didn't run. They didn't even scream. Instead, they whispered back, "How?" The answer came as a sensation rather than speech. A heavy sadness, the kind that settles behind the ribs. The spirit wanted to be remembered. From that night on, the haunting changed. The mischief, the missing keys, the flickering lights continued, but there was a new undercurrent of emotion to it, a sense of longing. The youngest began to write down everything that happened, hoping to piece together patterns. They started leaving a notebook open on their desk, and sometimes when they returned, a word or two had been scrawled inside, once the word "home," another time "boy," then a date, 1914. It was the same year the house had been built. The mother, too, began feeling the difference. Her dreams grew vivid, crowded with faces she didn't recognize. In one, she saw a man in black suspenders standing in the kitchen, staring at the sink as though he'd left something unfinished. In another, a child with curly hair ran through the hall, laughing, a sound she'd later hear faintly while awake. When she told her youngest, they compared notes and realized the same figures appeared to both of them. The dark man, the child, the unseen animals. It wasn't that the spirits had chosen the family, it was that the family could finally see them. Still, not all presences felt peaceful. There were moments when the air went wrong, heavy, charged, like the pause before a thunderstorm. The youngest would feel a sudden headache bloom between their eyes, the unmistakable signal of something darker nearby. Once, while alone in their room, the radio clicked on again, not to music this time, but to static. Within the static, a voice began to form, distant and distorted. It wasn't clear, but it was angry. The words came like growls under breath. "Get out!" Every light in the room flickered at once, plunging the space into a heartbeat of darkness. Then, silence. When their mother came in seconds later, the radio was off, the air calm again. "Something doesn't like us here," the youngest whispered. The mother shook her head. "No," she said quietly. "Something doesn't like change." It was an idea that made sense in a strange way. Old energy clings to old places, and their family had moved too many times, carried too much upheaval. If emotion could stain walls, theirs would have soaked every beam. Over the next few years, the family began treating the activity like weather reports. A cold spot in the hall. The old man was nearby, a light turning itself off, probably the child spirit playing again, a faint purr on the bed, the ghost cat keeping watch. There was comfort in the predictability of it. Visitors, however, didn't always take it so lightly. Once, a friend of the mother's came for tea, only to pale mid-conversation and stare into the corner of the room. "There's a man standing there," she whispered. No one else saw him. But when they turned to look, the framed picture on the wall tilted slowly forward and fell. The family only sighed, righted it again, and said, "He does that sometimes." Despite everything, or perhaps because of it, their house was filled with a strange kind of peace. There were no more bankruptcies, no tragedies, no fights that tore them apart. Life steadied. The youngest grew into their gift, learning to quiet their mind when the veil felt thin, to breathe rather than flinch when the air turned cold. They began to understand that the living and the dead are not opposites, but mirrors, both driven by memory, by love, by unfinished business. And once that understanding settled, the fear dissolved. Years later, as they looked back on their childhood, the memories of each house blurred together, one long corridor of rooms connected by invisible thread. The old two-story where the shadow in the mask first appeared. The modern home where bubbles formed out of thin air. The wooden house that creaked and breathed and listened. Different walls, same presence. The family's bond had become a kind of magnet, drawing the unseen, the forgotten, the curious. But instead of pushing it away, they learned to coexist with it, to listen when it whispered, and to speak when it called. Even now, as adults, they still experience the small signs. The smell of lilac in an empty room. The sudden flick of a light just before leaving the house. The phantom pressure on the bed. The ghost cat still keeping vigil. They've come to see these things not as hauntings, but as reminders. That every life leaves an imprint. That energy, whether born of love or grief, doesn't die, it only changes form. And for reasons they'll never fully understand, that energy seems to trust them. Sometimes when the house is quiet and the youngest, now grown, sits alone by the window, they'll feel it again, that faint shift in the air, a warmth at their shoulder, a whisper too soft to catch, and they'll smile instead of shudder, whispering into the dark, "I know. I remember." Because the truth is this: some families build legacies in stone or blood. Others build them in the spaces between, the breath between words, the flicker between light and shadow, the silence after a door creaks shut by itself. Theirs is a legacy of presence, of connection, of the living and the dead sharing the same fragile house, both learning in their own ways what it means to stay.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.